There is nothing wrong with your radio. Do not attempt to change the station. We are controlling the transmission. We control the volume. We can change the tone to a fuzzy bass or focus it to a tinny treble.
We can speed things up so fast you can hardly understand what's being said.
Or we can make things so slow you don't care.
We control the content. We can make it boring.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive.
Mystery Playhouse.
Or moronic.
90.1.
We can even make it repetitive. It's our show. We can do anything we want, because this is
Mystery Playhouse 90.1.
And welcome to the Mystery Playhouse. I am the Count, your host of horror. Come in, and set your bones down by the fire. But try not to mix them up with the other bones, Yes, a grave robber stole them from the local crypt. They were locked up, but he must have had a skeleton key, huh? Sure. It all started one night when the mad doctor said, "You know what I need, Bert? A ray." And Bert thought he said vertebrae, so he wasted a trip for nothing, huh? Sure. You think the doctor would learn once he asked for a hand and got it from the wrist down. Sure. And it all started one night when he asked for rain, but instead got a brain. Bert hasn't been too smart ever since. So, the funny thing is, the doctor never wanted a grave robber. He advertised for a deaf mute, but instead got a deaf commute. Sure. So much for sign language. Anyway, on to tonight's scary story. We hear blind terror on suspense, and then the sanctum will present terror by night. But first, is Vincent Price in the larger so scary?
You're twice as sure with two great names. Frigidaire and General Motors. Frigidaire brings you Hollywood Star Time. Today we present The Lodger, starring Vincent Price. Due to a sudden severe attack of laryngitis, Ida Lupino will not appear as previously announced. Today with Mr. Price, you will hear the noted Hollywood radio actress, Kathy Lewis. Each week at this time, Frigidaire brings you direct from Hollywood, radio versions of the finest motion pictures with Hollywood's greatest stars. Today, Hollywood Star Time presents the radio production of the dramatic 20th Century Fox picture, The Lodger. 20th Century Fox also are producers of Dragonwing, which stars Gene Tierney, Vincent Price, and Walter Houston. Now in just a minute, The Lodger. You're twice as sure with two great names, Frigidaire and General Motors. Frigidaire, the greatest name in refrigeration, is made only by General Motors. And it is this association of experience, of skill with skill, that makes Frigidaire America's favorite refrigerator today. The 7 million Frigidaires built and sold are the best proof of Frigidaire's outstanding record of dependability, of lasting satisfaction. For back of every great refrigeration principle pioneered by Frigidaire, back of every exciting new Frigidaire feature, back of every exclusive Frigidaire advantage, is one all-important purpose: to keep food good to eat. Remember this when you choose your new refrigerator. Remember the record of millions of Frigidaires in millions of American kitchens. And remember, you're twice as sure with two great names. For Frigidaire is made only by General Motors. Now The Lodger, starring Vincent Price, with Kathy Lewis as Kitty Langley, and featuring another brilliant musical score conducted by Alfred Newman, The Lodger.
This is the story of a scourge that broke upon the city of London in the year 1888. It is the story of a man who moved in the shadows, beyond the flickering gaslights of that era, and who wrote his name upon the scroll of infamy with a knife. And his name was Murder.
Lord Lummy, she's dead. Jack the Ripper, again.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. You have a room for rent?
Why, yes, sir. But it's in the attic. Would that be all right?
May I look at it, please?
Why, yes, sir, of course you may. Do come in.
Seems very suitable.
Of course, it's only an attic, made over a bit.
It will do very well. I wanted a place where I could do a little experimental work.
Experimental work?
Yes, I'm a pathologist, a sort of medical scientist.
Oh.
The room will do very well, except for those pictures on the wall.
The pictures?
They're actresses, I believe.
Why, yes.
Would you mind taking them down, please?
Why, not at all. But wouldn't it look bare?
No. No, I have a small portrait of my brother with me. It's the only picture I've ever cared for. My brother was a genius. I loved him very dearly. He need not have died.
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, I only hope you don't object to actresses, because there's one in the house.
Oh, really?
My niece Kitty. She's been making a name with her dancing, and now she's going to open at the Royal Piccadilly next week with her own company.
Interesting.
Kitty Langley and her girl.
I'll take this room. You've no idea how much it means to me to find just the place I need. It's a relief. A very great relief. This is like a refuge. Quiet. Peaceful. Peace.
But, Ellen, I'm against it. I don't see why we have to take in lodgers. Can't we get along on my pension?
No, Robert.
But, Aunt Ellen, I'm beginning to do very well on the stage.
Thank you, Kitty. No, it's settled. Lodger stays.
Well, what sort of a fellow is the fellow?
He's no sort of a fellow. He's a scientist, a pathologist. What's a pathologist?
It's something like being a doctor, Auntie.
Well, come to think of it, he does carry a little black bag, just like a doctor's. Well, now he's here, I'm glad he's here.
Yes, there was another Jack the Ripper killing last night.
Funny how the Ripper always picks on women.
Well, I'll feel safer now, too, Aunt Ellen, with the lodger about.
He doesn't approve of actresses, you know.
Oh, doesn't he now? Well, I might not give him a pass to my opening at Piccadilly next week. But then again, I might. It depends on how our lodger behaves himself.
Stop fussing so. It's your big night. You mustn't be late.
I am not fussing. I know it's my big night, and I shan't be late. Where are my flowers?
Oh, good evening, lady.
Oh, good evening, Mr. Slade.
I found this corsage on the table at the landing. I brought them down to you.
Oh, thank you.
I was coming down for an evening stroll, and there it was.
Wouldn't you like to see my show tonight? I have a pass for you.
Thank you, Miss Langley, but I may be out late tonight.
I heard you come in very late last night, too.
Yes, I enjoy the night. I like to go down to the river.
The river? At night?
Have you ever put your face close to the soft, dark water and let the water flow over your hands? Deep, dark water is full of peace and quiet. It cools and cleanses. It washes away dirt and rot and decay. It washes away evil. Evil.
Don't you think that Kitty looks charming?
Yes. Charming. The woman, subtle of heart.
What's that?
Scripture. Solomon. Behold, there met him a woman, subtle of heart. I must go now. Good evening, and good success, Miss Langley.
Thank you, Mr. Slade. What a strange man.
Somehow he seems lonely and lost.
Yes, all of that. And rather fascinating, too, somehow.
Yes? Who is it, please?
Miss Langley. Miss Annie. Are you this?
Oh, come in, Annie.
I just wanted to drop in and wish you luck, Miss Langley.
Thank you, Annie.
And I wanted to have a look at my old dressing room.
Aren't you going to stay and see the show, Annie?
It would break my heart, miss, seeing you get the fame I just missed. Besides, a nephew of mine's being married, and I said I'd sing for him. And it's a long way to Whitechapel.
Whitechapel? It hasn't been too safe for women in Whitechapel lately. Do be careful, Annie, won't you?
Who's there? Who are you to block my path? What do you... No. No!
The water. The cool, dark, deep, dark river washing away the evil blood of women. Deep, dark, deep water.
Yes? Oh, good morning.
Good morning. Miss Kitty Langley?
Yes?
I'm Inspector John Warwick, Scotland Yard.
The Yard? Why?
I believe you knew an actress, Miss Annie Rowley.
You'd better come in.
Yes, thank you.
What's wrong? Has anything happened to Annie?
She was murdered in Whitechapel last night.
Was it?
Another ripper crime, I'm afraid.
Oh, no. Poor Annie.
What was that, Kitty? What's the matter with Annie?
Aunt Ellen, this is Inspector Warwick, Scotland Yard. Annie Rowley's been killed.
Was it him?
We're afraid so. We'll detain your niece at headquarters only a short time, I assure you.
What's going on outside?
Oh, Mr. Slade.
I noticed a lot of policemen about.
There with Mr. Warwick. This is Mr. Slade.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Inspector Warwick is from Scotland Yard.
Oh, yes?
Now, there's been another ripper crime. We thought Miss Langley might be helpful.
Oh, what can I do? When Whitechapel's swarming with police who can't do anything about it? You don't know any more about the Ripper than you did before.
Oh, we have our theories.
Oh, have you, Inspector? Such as?
One, that he's a maniac, killing at random.
Do you share that theory?
Frankly, no. He picks on women exclusively, and women who've been in the theater at some time of their lives. That's one clue. Then some of our men think they saw him last night. They say they're sure they saw him carrying a small bag of some sort.
Small bag.
Very slim evidence at best, Inspector, don't you think?
Yes, sir. At the very best, it's very little.
Well, good luck to you. I've work to do upstairs in my laboratory. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Slade. Are you ready, Miss Langley? We'd best get down to headquarters and have it over with.
I smell something burning. What's burning?
It's nothing. I'm doing an experiment, that's all. Go away.
Robert, I must tell you. While you were out, I smelled something burning in Mr. Slade's room. He wouldn't let me in. Later, when he went out, I found this in the refuse outside.
What the deuce is it?
A metal frame of his little handbag. Robert,
He burned his bag.
Well, that was sensible of him.
What do you mean?
A man was mobbed this morning in Trafalgar Square because he carried a small handbag like that. They think everyone with a small black handbag is Jack the Ripper. I've hidden my own, if you want to know.
Oh.
You wouldn't catch me in the street with it, not in these days.
Oh, of course, Robert. Oh, I'm so relieved. Oh, is Kitty home from Scotland Yard yet?
No. I presume they'll be detaining her there for a bit.
Is there anything else you want to ask me, Inspector?
No, I'm only sorry I kept you here this long, Miss Langley. But if I could only find a fingerprint of the Ripper, I'd have some chance of tracing him. Well, I shall get another chance soon enough.
Why, Inspector?
The Ripper strikes every 12 days, roughly. He's about due again a week from Thursday. We'll see.
It's the time the whole world over. It's the poor what gets the blind.
I ain't doing too well, am I? Then it's been many a day since you made a concertina talk in a music hall, Jenny. My Jenny. It's the time the whole world's over. Who's there? Who's that, I say? Ooh.
Cool, dark, deep, dark river. Cleansing, washing away the evil blood of women. The water, of peace and quiet.
In just a few moments, Frigidaire will bring you the second act of The Lodger, starring Vincent Price with Kathy Lewis. And now, ladies and gentlemen, Frigidaire takes this opportunity to celebrate a very special event. I'd like to tell you about it. During the war, Stars and Stripes, the Army newspaper, conducted a war bond contest in the European Theater of War. In addition to some other prizes, 25 Frigidaire refrigerators were offered to the 25 GIs who best expressed how they were going to make use of their war bond savings in fulfilling their post-war plans. 25 prize-winning GIs have each been awarded a Frigidaire refrigerator. And today we're awarding publicly a Frigidaire to one of the winners who is accepting his own prize on behalf of all his other prize-winning buddies. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to present this prize winner to you. He participated in the D-Day invasion of Europe and later in the occupation of Germany. And his campaign ribbon shows 6 battle stars. I'm pleased to present First Sergeant James Hooker. Sergeant Hooker, front and center. Sergeant, I understand that one of your winning post-war plans was to organize a fishing camp in Florida.
That's right, Mr. Niles, in St. Augustine, Florida. That's one of the best fishing spots in the world.
Well, your entry letter mentioned something about having the property in Florida and that you had the building material situation licked. Will you have to cash in your war bonds to finance the project?
No, you see, I have the property just outside of St. Augustine, and I figure there's enough lumber, rocks, and pilings right on the place for whatever buildings I'll need.
Oh, I see. You have the ambition, and all you need is the green light from Uncle Sam and a lot of elbow grease. Were you overseas when you wrote your prize-winning letter?
Yes, Mr. Niles, I was in a hospital in Paris.
I'll bet you're anxious to get started on your post-war plans and go back to your old home in St. Augustine, huh?
Right, Mr. Niles, very right.
Well, Sergeant James Hooker, we're happy that you and the other buddies of yours who had prize-winning ideas about what they'd do with their war bond savings are back now and can get to work doing the things they want to do. So, on behalf of the Frigidaire Division and General Motors Corporation, I want you to accept this prize of a brand-new Frigidaire refrigerator. I want you to accept it not only for yourself, but as a stand-in for all the other prize winners. Our very best wishes to you, Sergeant Hooker.
We hope that your plans and the plans of all your GI buddies come true.
Thank you, Mr. Niles, and I want to thank Frigidaire for contributing these prizes. Winning this Frigidaire is more than winning just a swell refrigerator. It is a symbol of the home and the good, quiet, happy, peaceful days we fought so hard to bring back. Thanks again, Mr. Niles, and thanks, Frigidaire.
Your Frigidaire will be installed in your home tomorrow, and here's your sergeant, your certificate, Sergeant, and good luck. Hollywood Star Time continues now with the radio production of the 20th Century Fox picture, The Lodger, starring Vincent Price. 20th Century Fox is currently showing its Technicolor production, Do You Love Me?, which stars Dick Hames, Maureen O'Hara, and Harry James. Now, Act Two, The Lodger.
Again, the killer of Whitechapel is struck. Again, his victim is an actress. Late that night in the house where the mysterious lodger has taken an attic room, Kitty Langley awakens. The pungent odor of something burning makes her sit up suddenly in bed. Hastily, she throws a robe about her and runs downstairs into the kitchen. Mr. Slade, the lodger, is bending over the huge wood-burning stove, prodding into the flames with a stick.
Mr. Slade.
What? Oh, Miss Langley. Keep away.
What are you doing in the kitchen? What's burning?
I am burning my ulster.
There are dark stains on it.
Yes, my ulster became contaminated in my laboratory. I have to be drastic or the contamination will spread.
Oh, you mean some disease?
Yes. Yes, there. There, that finishes it. It had to be destroyed.
There's no danger now?
None at all.
It was very thoughtful of you to be concerned about the rest of us, Mr. Slade.
Kitty, what's going on down here?
I smelled something burning.
It's all right, Aunt Ellen. Uncle Robert.
Mr. Slade.
What's happening? It's almost morning.
Auntie, Uncle, everything's all right now. Mr. Slade was simply burning his coat.
Burning his coat?
What for? Wait. Listen, a newsboy outside. Listen.
New Ripperman in Whitechapel. Read all about it. Jack the Ripper again. New outrage.
Again.
Read all about it.
Will you excuse me? I've been working all night on a difficult experiment. Please excuse me. I'm very sorry I disturbed you. Good morning.
Good morning, son.
Kitty, why was he burning his ulster?
Because it was stained.
Stained? How? With what?
Something infectious from his laboratory.
Oh.
I'd better get a couple of hours more sleep. It's nearly morning. See you in a couple of hours again.
Robert, don't you think we ought to call the police?
Call the police? What on earth for?
Him. First he burned his bag. Then another killing last night, and he burns his ulster. And he's out all hours of the night. And we don't know anything about him, really.
Oh, you imaginative women.
Just the same, I don't think Kitty ought ever to be alone in a house with him. She's an actress, you know.
Well, perhaps you're right. We won't leave her alone after this.
Oh, no, Aunt Ellen. This corsage is much too small for an opening at the Variety Palace.
Well, now, don't you fret about it, Kitty. I'll go to the florist right now and have it checked.
Oh, Auntie, would you? Mr. Warwick will be calling for me soon.
Call Uncle Robert if you want anything while I'm gone.
All right, Auntie, I will. Yes? Oh, Mr. Slade, did Uncle Robert give you the tickets I left you for my show tonight?
Yes, thank you. He gave it to me as he went out.
Uncle Robert went out?
Yes, about an hour ago.
Huh?
I suppose you know, Miss Langley, that you're very beautiful.
Why, thank you.
I expect many men have told you that.
I don't always believe them.
My beloved brother could have put your beauty on canvas for all time.
Your brother?
Yes, my brother. He was an artist.
Oh.
He was a genius. He might have been immortal, but it was the beauty of women which drew him to his end. Beauty such as your own, it destroys men. It could destroy you.
Is that a compliment?
Perhaps. Being beautiful is one thing. But when a woman is beautiful and exhibits her beauty on the stage to lure men on, they add evil to their beauty. They powder and paint and perfume themselves to draw men to their destruction.
Mr. Slade,
There can be such evil in beauty, Miss Langley. But if the evil is cut out, only the beauty remains.
Kitty, Kitty, are you all right?
Why, of course I'm all right, Aunt Ellen.
Oh, I didn't know your uncle had gone out. I met him outside on the steps.
Mr. Slade and I were just having a very interesting discussion, Auntie. Weren't we, Mr. Slade?
Yes. Yes, indeed.
You'll use the ticket I gave you, won't you, Mr. Slade?
Yes, I shall. Thank you.
And, Auntie, will you go down and entertain Mr. Warwick until I come down? I think I hear his carriage outside right now.
And in another minute, Mr. Warwick, he might have had his hands on Kitty. I'm sure of it.
It's an accumulation of many things, Inspector. I'm beginning to wonder myself.
Is there any way we can be sure?
I managed to get a thumbprint of the Ripper from a window frame. Tell me, what have you here in the house that this, Mr. Slade has handled recently?
Well, I brought him his tea a while ago.
Good. I want the cup and saucer. What else?
Well, there's a glass-covered portrait of his brother up in his room.
We'll look at that, too.
Shall I get the cup and saucer now, Inspector?
Yes, please, at once. Then, you and Kitty, go ahead to the theater. Tell her I've been detained. Robert, you stay here with me. I might need you. Positive this is a picture of Mr. Slade's brother?
Why, yes. Why?
Why, it's fantastic. There's another painting like this in our Black Museum at the Yard. Slade's brother again, but later on dissipated and degenerated.
How on earth did it land in the Black Museum?
We found it in the room of an actress named Claire Baker, the Ripper's first victim.
Oh?
Slade killed Claire Baker because he thought she ruined his brother.
Then Slade and the Ripper are the same person?
These matching fingerprints confirm that beyond any doubt. The man's insane, mad with grief and desire for revenge.
Inspector, he went to see Kitty dance tonight.
And it's 11 days since the last killing. He's just about due again. We'd better get down to the theater at once.
Come on, hotels. Your cast will be forgot if you will learn to do the new Parisian glass. Do Mr. Slade.
I slipped into your dressing room right after your act. I wanted to be the first to congratulate you, Miss Langley.
But I want to go out front and see the rest of the show. And I have to change.
You're so exquisite. Beautiful beyond words.
Mr. Slade.
You corrupt and destroy men as my brother was destroyed. Do you know that men are waiting out there to destroy me?
No. I don't know what you mean.
But I can't lose you now. Oh, Solomon warned against women like you and the evil and such as you. It's such lovely women as you who drag men down.
Please, please
go. You corrupt and destroy men as my brother was destroyed because you are beautiful and evil. I love your beauty as I hate your evil. But if the evil is cut out...
No.
Then only the beautiful remains.
Keep away.
Don't be afraid.
Let me go.
Suffer not a sorceress to live, so saith the scriptures.
Please, please.
I only want to let the evil out of you with this slim, keen knife.
No.
This bright blade.
No.
Suffer
no.
not a sorceress
help
to
me.
Live.
Help. Help. Help.
Kitty.
John, help me.
Don't move, Slade. I'll shoot. You'll never take me alive. You'll never catch me.
Oh, he's gotten away. I hit him, but he got away.
He always loved the river. I think he'll go to the river.
Water. The river. Deep, dark, cold, dark river. Washing away the evil. Cleansing all evil. Peaceful and dark. Cool, dark, and restful.
Hi, Inspector! Here's the trail again! It's blood on the pavement!
Right you are! Stop! Yes, there he is! Come on, carefully, though.
Stay back.
Drop the knife, Slade.
Stay back, I say.
Drop it, Slade.
Stay back.
Drop it.
I warn you. I warn you.
What's that? Maybe he's going into the river. Yes, Sheriff Kitty. I'm here.
Are you all right?
I am. Yes, Kitty, he's gone.
The river drew him, even at the last.
The river sweeps a city clean.
Yes. It carries things out to sea, and they sink in deep, dark water. In dark, peaceful water. Forever.
Thank you, Vincent Price, for your exciting portrayal of the Lodger, and thank you also, Kathy Lewis, for stepping into Ida Lupino's role and giving such a splendid performance. This radio adaptation of The Lodger, which came to you direct from Hollywood, was written by Milton Geiger, with music supervised by Alfred Newman. The entire production was under the direction of Robert L. Redd. Hollywood Star Time is presented each week with the best wishes of your Frigidaire dealer, who invite you to come in and learn about the famous line of Frigidaire home appliances, electric refrigerators, electric ranges, electric water heaters, home freezers, and a wide variety of refrigerating and air conditioning equipment for homes, farms, stores, offices, and factories. Next week, Hollywood Star Time presents The Man Who Broke the Bank at Monte Carlo, starring the sensational English actor Rex Harrison. This is Wendell Niles speaking for Frigidaire, made only by General Motors. This is PBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Kids. Now that was scary, wasn't it, huh? Sure. Now, that story had what I call a real nice slice of life, huh? And you have to admit, what Jack did took real guts, along with various other organs. Sure. I always say, all work and no play makes Jack a dull blade, huh? That's what they say. But you know, Jack wasn't always a killer. He had to build up his criminal career like the rest of them. Why, I remember when he used to just pick pocket knives. Yes, he was a lot younger back then, but just as sharp, huh? Now he's in the big time. He even got a film of his own. Yes, he was a good director, but you know what they say? He made too many cuts, huh? But I'll try to cut it with the jokes and move on to our next story. It's Blind Terror with Suspense. So scary!
Suspense. This is the Man in Black, here to introduce this half hour of suspense.
Now, a tale well calculated to keep you in suspense.
This story begins 20 years ago. I traveled as a magician with a small carnival through southeastern Europe. One night we came to a village in Malo, Russia. Our cymbals sounded, our torches flickered in the spring wind, and the villagers gathered around our tents and wagons. I had taken my place in the black box outside my tent. There were holes in the box through which I could watch the crowd while the barker made his announcement.
Barastro, the marvel of marvels! Barastro, the magician, who speaks with the dead and reads the secrets of life!
At this moment, I saw her for the first time. Her young and gentle face surprised me among so many peasants. I said to myself, what a strange girl, what a beautiful child. I kept watching her. I couldn't keep my eyes away. At length, an old peasant led her in, holding her by the hand. I saw at once that she was blind.
My granddaughter would like you to tell her future.
Can you tell my future?
Yes.
Will it be a happy one, my future?
Hold out your hand. I will tell you.
Here.
A dark mist passed over me. I felt a sudden chill as I touched her hand. I listened to the voices which foretell the future. Sorrow, sorrow, they breathed. Pain and sorrow. Fly, run. I studied the girl's face, a fear gripping at my heart. Her large, sightless eyes were calm, resigned. I could not bring myself to tell her what I saw. The spirits promise you happiness. I lied to her. Your hands will touch beautiful things. Love and delight await you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. Thank you.
The beginning. Her face haunted me that night. I could not sleep. I made inquiries the next morning and found her. We walked through the hill. She did not need my hand to guide her. She knew every stone, every turn of the path. She spoke of the trees around us. She had strange names for them.
I call that tree lullaby because it sings when it sways in the wind.
Lullaby?
And that one, see? With its branches open towards heaven. I call that one prayer.
How do you know its branches open toward the sky?
When I was younger, I climbed it.
Anna.
Come, I'll race you to the bed of flowers at the turn.
Anna.
Hurry, I run fast.
We walked often through the hills. I knew that she was aware of her destiny. The stars had told me she would not live long, and that agony and terror waited for her on a short journey. Our caravan remained for 2 weeks in the village at the end of that time. I asked Anna to come with me as my wife.
You make me very happy, Shai. I could live only with you.
I will love you with all my heart.
And you will teach me, Shai. You will teach me to see you.
To see?
Does one need eyes to see as you do? Shai, you will teach me to see beyond the horizon. You will teach me to see as you see.
We were married. We rode together in the gilded wagon, and the vows were taken under a clear sky. Suddenly the sky changed. It was only then that I realized what I had done. In seeking to save her, I was fulfilling the terrible message of the stars. For it was I, Shari Barastro, who was the instrument fate had selected for her ruin. Then it came. One night, as I stood in the black box outside my tent, I knew that I needed no further words from the mist. The prophecy. It was there. It had come. He stood among the peasants before our tent. A graceful figure, smiling, leaning on his cane, a man of the world. Amazingly out of place in this faraway little village. I looked at him through the holes in my box. As I looked, I turned cold. I watched him, and I felt afraid.
He was studying Anna. Never once did he stop looking at her. My temper is quick and fiery. I went up to him as he was watching Anna. Oh, how subtle he was. How graceful. I seized his arm and demanded to know what he meant by staring at my wife. He removed my hand as if it were a child. I can tell you there was something terrifying in his strength.
I most humbly beg your pardon for this misunderstanding. Let me introduce myself. My name is Rico Sansoni. I'm a student of the occult, traveling throughout the world in search of knowledge. Inside me, I feel that girl has remarkable psychic powers. I'd hope to be able to induce her to join with my assistant. I've still panicked you on the stage, but now that I know she's your wife, I apologize again for my seeming forwardness.
Well, if that is the case, there is nothing to do but to accept your apology, eh, Anna? I think it is only fair. Anna?
No. I have nothing to say.
It was thus Rico Sansoni entered our lives. Little by little during the days that followed, he attached himself to us. He talked, always talked. We listened, Anna and I, to his tales. He'd been everywhere, seen everything. He brought the world into our gilded wagon. In his presence, I always felt elated and flattered. Thus does a man move in the grip of his destiny. Thus do we dig with our own hands the appointed grave for our happiness. And one night Anna came to me and took my hand and told me something that made my heart grow blank.
Charlie, Rico Sansoni has made love to me.
Anna.
I've done nothing wrong. I'm afraid of Rico.
Anna.
I tell you this so you will understand my fear.
Do you want to tell me all about it now?
Yes.
Tell me then.
Rico came to me this afternoon while I was alone. He took my hand and held it gently in his. I suspected nothing until he asked me if I loved you and how deeply I loved you. Then he asked me if I love you more than happiness or life. I took my hand from him and said, I cannot talk of love to you, even of my love for my husband. Please leave me.
Rico! Come in.
She has told you. Sorry, forgive me. For a moment, I grew weak. Let me remain your friend. I brought you both some flowers. I picked them myself. Will you accept them? You won't accept them?
Of course we will, my friend. Oh, no, how could I have doubted you? I understand. Come, we forget the entire incident.
You're kind, really. You're kind.
This was the third month of our friendship, and now I began to feel it was my companionship he desired, not Anna's. We spent long hours together without Anna. Under his care, my mind was expanding, my powers developing. He seemed interested in my every move. And again, I was flattered, lured, disarmed.
You have a funny way of saying the word beautiful, my friend. How is it you say it?
Oh, beautiful.
That's it.
Beautiful. You were telling me about the Houdini method of restoration.
Yes, so I was.
Beautiful.
Hmm?
Beautiful.
I like you, Charlie. I like you very much.
Amazing. Amazing. How one can be drawn in by flattery and charm.
Then one day I was sitting in my tent when a curious sense came over me. I felt a pressure on my heart as if a hand were closing around it. It was a warning. I left the tent quickly and hurried to the apartment. Anna had remained there as she frequently did in the afternoon. I found myself running toward the door.
I paused, waited until I had recovered my breath. And then, forcing a smile to my lips, opened the door. I saw Rico. Rico standing with his arms around her. Her face raised to his lips. Speechless, powerless, I looked at him. I heard a voice murmuring words of love. Her arms moved around his neck, and she kissed him. Then I heard his voice. Anna. Anna, my darling.
Darling, my love.
Anna, my darling. My beautiful darling. At the sound of his voice, a horror seized me. Now I knew why he had spent so many hours with me, why he was so interested. It was my voice. It was Barathro talking. It was the voice that seemed to come from my own throat. Oh, and I understood what had happened. I sprang forward, shouting his name. Rico! He turned and faced me. He pointed his finger at me as if he were an image in a mirror. Rico! He echoed. I heard Anna scream. And murder was in my heart. I flew at this monster. He struggled across the room. He answered my cries with cries that echoed each note, each inflection of my voice. I saw him through my rage. His face was contorted like my own. His every feature had changed. He was Barathro. There were two Barathros screaming together, tumbling over each other. In his hands that were like steel. I could not move or cry out. His hand was on my throat. I lay gasping, crazed. And it was Barathro who was holding me. Then this horrible and familiar figure changed. It became Rico. It was Rico Santone who spoke. The breath was leaving my body. I was strangling, dying. Yet I could hear him. Barathro! God, you're killing me. Shari. Shari, have mercy. I'm dying. His voice was faint. I felt in this moment the agonies of 100 deaths. For as my eyes grew dark, I saw with horror the thing he had in his mind. He was pretending it was I who was killing him. And thus he would kill me and go to her as Barathro. It would be Rico Santone would be buried. Barathro would remain. For a moment I caught a glimpse of his cold, ruthless eyes, burning now over my face as he enacted his false death groaning, pleading for mercy. And the strength drawn from the soul filled my lungs. I cried out with all my might. Anna! Anna! Knowing that by this she would understand it was I who was dying. And darkness seized me. An hour had passed. When I opened my eyes, my head was splitting, my throat was stiff, and I raised myself and looked. He was gone. I saw her. She was standing in a corner of the room, crouched against the wall, her hand against her teeth, and staring into the terrible dark around her. Anna! 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 It is I, Anna. It's I, Shadi. Anna! Oh, God, Anna, please. Anna, darling, listen to me. Anna, give me your hand. Anna, Anna, listen, listen. Did he die, Charlie, your husband? Did he die? Anna, listen, listen. Remember. Remember, Anna. Remember when we first kissed. That time on the hill, remember, Anna? I called you little princess, remember, Anna? Anna, and about your trees, Anna. Your trees, huh? How about the trees, Anna? Lullaby, lullaby, Anna. Lullaby and the prayer. And the one of these branches pointing towards heaven, the one you cut. Anna, please, please. Anna, please. It is I, Anna, listen. Listen carefully. Anna, the spirit promised you happiness. Remember, Anna? You are. Hands will touch beautiful things. Love and delight of victory.
Daddy.
Oh, my darling. My honor.
Daddy, hold me, Daddy, dear.
Yes, my darling.
Hold me.
Oh, you close. Dear, dear, my darling. It's all right. It's all right. It's all right. Rico had disappeared. We laid our plan. As soon as she was able to walk, we abandoned the carnival. We were inseparable. She could not bear to have me away for even one moment. I understood everything. I saw it, even the trembling that would seize us sometimes. When I took her hand, it was I alone. I alone he could not deceive. To anyone else, he could become Barastro, even to her. To her whose senses had learned every breath, every inflection of the man she loved. To her he had been Barastro. So the months passed. Our life had become again almost like a honeymoon. Almost, I say, for there were nights when I would wake to find her fingers tracing the contours of my face. Then it was I pretended to be you and remained at her side. We said nothing. But we knew the shadow in each other's mind. Everything went smoothly, though, until one evening when I entered the cabaret where I performed, feeling unusually disturbed. It was winter. I was removing my coat. When it came again. I had known it would, the warning, the hand closing over my heart. I ran from the place and raced home. I entered our cottage by the back door, quietly like a thief, and I stood listening. From inside, I could hear her voice.
Daddy, you're in like this. I will take care of you, Daddy. I will make you feel better.
Anna, my dear Anna, how I love you. He was back. He was back. One does not reason in the midst of a nightmare. Yet terror can wake the mind to a clairvoyance. An understanding beyond thought. I stood motionless, silent, listening. The light was turned out. I heard her laugh like a child in the dark. And this sound killed me. Yes, one is dead forever when happiness is torn from the heart. I wanted to rush into the room. I wanted to shout, Anna, Anna, don't touch him. He's Rico. But instead, I slipped quickly from the house. I walked in the cold street. My thoughts returned. I had acted out of one clear impulse. Through the terror and agony of those moments. And I heard her take him in her arms. There remained the certainty above everything else. I must save her. Then I knew I'd acted wisely. Had I rushed into the room, had I made a noise, she would have died. She would have known in that moment, as I stood listening to him, that he had been there before. That he had been there before. That he had crept through our defenses and our shadow creeps. And we had not known. I thought of them together as I walked. And then I thought again that I had only to rush back to speak of him. Yes, and destroy her. I kept on walking. And as I walked, I began to understand him. Yes, I was dealing with a monster. he would manage to leave her as he must have done so often before, a few moments before I was due to return from the cabaret. And if I sensed something was wrong, he would rely on my love for her to keep this sense a secret. He knew me well. He understood I would allow my heart to be eaten away with grief. And I would not make a sign lest I destroy her whom I love more than myself. It was I who must be careful, not he. He knew me. He gambled on me. I determined to kill him the first moment I saw him alone. Then I began to think of his superhuman strength and that he might kill me as he had at first intended. And that he would go on living with her as Barastro. She would never know I was dead. She would continue to love me in his arms. To press her kisses upon my murderer. And this was the thought that contained in it the fullest measure of horror. The thought of that moment when she would see him and not me. Do you understand the grief of that night? Yes, it is fortunate I cannot remember it all. I returned home at the time Rico wanted me to. I wasn't careful about my coming. I trusted him, do you understand? I trusted him that out of his evil, he would spare her as I spared her out of my love. I entered the bedroom. I opened the door and walked in. She was alone. Anna? Anna, dear. Anna! It is I! It is not Rico! It is I! Anna! 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 This is my memory of Anna. My memory. She seized her face with her hands as if she were tearing something. Yes. The darkness. As I rushed to her, she fell. She did not speak again. In the morning, she died.
And so closes tonight's tale of suspense. Suspense.
Oh, geez. Now that was the scariest, huh? Perhaps you've already guessed the moral to tonight's story. Love is blind, huh? Sure. And the sad thing is, if the husband hadn't been so afraid of offending his wife, he could have asked her to stop seeing the other guy. Sure. Oh, but no. All that pretending. He never even gave his wife a chance to say she only had eyes for him, huh? Oh, then, well, they may not have worked, but at least she only had eyes. If people would just realize that blind are not helpless, they can do almost anything. In fact, my favorite teacher was blind. And believe me, when I say I was his best pupil, I mean it. Sure. There was nothing he couldn't do. Why, before he taught, he was an engineer. That's right. He'd been working on the Braille Road, huh? You should get to know more of the blind, seriously. Why, just the other night, I danced with a blind date at the eyeball, huh? Well, I can tell you're rolling your eyes. So it's time to move on to our next story. Up next, Agnes Moorhead in the Inner Sanctum classic Terror by Night. So scary!
Good evening, friends of the creaking door. This is your host to welcome you into the inner sanctum. Come in, come in. Ah, I always feel lighthearted in weather like this, so perhaps we ought to have a little poetry before we begin. An Arab girl named Yuhim was lied to by her husband, Menuhim. For this little trifle, she shot him with a rifle. And now she could see right through him. And now, if your scalpels are sharpened and ready, we will proceed with the business of the evening. Tonight, we're going to do a little study in terror. Have you ever been alone with fear? Alone in the night and frightened? Well, here is our star, Agnes Moorhead, in the role of Linda Dixon, who will tell us a tale of terror by night.
It was Friday night, and I think I was already a little nervous as I drove north into the mountains. I hadn't wanted to waste even an hour of my two-week vacation, so I'd had all my bags packed and the car waiting at the curb in front of my office building. Everything would have been all right if the fuel pump in my 6-year-old car hadn't acted up. It took the mechanic almost 2 hours to get me going. So now I was driving through the night with 50 miles more to go, and I was tired and nervous and irritated. And then I heard the whistle in the distance. At first I couldn't place it. And then I remembered the state prison was somewhere in the vicinity. The whistle. It meant a prisoner had escaped. I reached over and turned on the radio. Maybe they were broadcasting something about it.
Motorists are warned to be on the lookout for Lee Hartley, who escaped from the death cell at State Prison at 9:15 p.m. Tall, dark-haired, regular features, no distinguishing marks, Hartley is a confirmed killer. He is believed to be armed. Beware of Hartley. He would rather kill than eat.
He would rather kill than eat? And that man was loose, perhaps waiting around the next bend in the road.
Hartley was helped to escape from the outside by his sweetheart, Helen Hearn, a red-headed woman just as vicious as Hartley himself. It is thought that Hartley and the Hearn woman may have separated after the escape. All motorists are warned to beware of a dark-haired man and a red-haired woman alone or together.
My hand was shaking a little as I turned off the radio. I looked in the car mirror and shivered. I, too, have red hair. There was a storm coming on, and I was driving into it, and the night was black, and I felt small and lonely and frightened in the car. And then I saw them in the mirror, the headlights sweeping up behind me. A car. It had come out of nowhere. It was pulling alongside, cutting me off. I cowered behind the wheel and watched the door of that other car open. A man stepped out. Oh, and I breathed a sigh of relief. It was a state trooper.
You driving all alone, miss?
Yes, officer.
Sorry if I scared you. We're stopping all cars. Where are you headed for?
Well, I'm going up to the lodge at Smuggler's Notch. That's near Mount Mansfield. You see, I started out late from the city, and I'm having motor trouble.
Yeah, sure. Can I see your driver's license, please?
My driver's license? Yes, of course. Here, I've got it somewhere in my purse. I seem to be all fingers. It's that escaped prisoner, Hartley.
How'd you know about him?
I heard the prison whistle, and then it came over the radio about Hartley and his red-haired girlfriend.
Hey, you've got red hair, too.
You don't think I'm that woman.
Find that license yet?
Oh, yes, I'm sure it's in here. There's so many things in this bag. Oh, here, I've got it. Here's my license.
Thanks. What time did you say you left the city?
About 5 o'clock.
It took you a long time to get up this far.
Well, I told you I had motor trouble.
So you did. Okay, Miss Dixon, here's your license.
Thank you.
You can go ahead.
Thank you. Oh, darn. There it goes again.
More motor trouble.
Oh, it's the same thing. The mechanic said it might happen again. Oh, it started.
You want to get that fixed? First chance you get.
Oh, it's too late. All the service stations are closed.
Well, there's one that's open all night, about 2 miles up the road. Better stop there. Bill Slater's place. He's a good mechanic. He'll fix you up. Tell him Joe Nesbitt sent you.
Thanks, I will.
And listen, Miss Dixon.
Yes?
You be careful. Don't stop to give anyone a lift, man or woman.
Oh, don't worry. I won't.
Oh.
few minutes, I saw the lights of the station. I swung into the open space in front of the pumps and stopped. There was another car, a coupe, parked at the pump, but there was nobody in it. And I didn't see any attendant around either. I pressed the horn button. No one answered. Everything seemed so quiet and suddenly ominous. I found myself shivering. I had a curious feeling that someone was watching me. I had to get away from there. Fast! Oh, the starter wouldn't work again. Oh, it won't start again. Oh, it won't start. Oh, it won't start. For a long time, I sat behind the wheel listening for the sound of footsteps stealing up behind the car. But there were none. Then I could bear it no longer. I had to get out of the car. I had to see what was in that office. I opened the door of the car and stepped down on the gravel. Anybody in there? No answer. I clenched my fists and stepped inside. There on the floor at my feet lay the body of a man. His mechanic's jumper was stained red. And his throat was cut. How long I stood there, I'll never know. I was petrified. Unable to move, unable to take my eyes from the body. What's that? Someone coming downstairs. Hartley. It must be Hartley, the killer. He must have been hiding somewhere upstairs. I must get away. But how? My car won't run. The coupe. The coupe. I could jump into that. Yes. Yes. Oh, if I can reach that coupe before he comes down.
Anything wrong, sister?
Oh, too late.
Anything I can do for you, sister?
Yes. Yes, it's my car. It won't start. I thought someone here might help me.
Sorry. There doesn't seem to be anybody around. That's my coupe over there. I stopped for gas and no one came out, so I went in and looked around.
But did you find anybody?
There isn't a living soul in there.
Oh.
You look kind of tired.
No, I'm all right.
My name is Taylor. John Taylor.
I'm Linda Dixon.
Linda Dixon, huh?
Yes.
Glad to know you. You traveling far tonight?
I'm going to Mount Mansfield, to the lodge at Smuggler's Notch. They're expecting me.
Well, what do you know about that?
What?
Mount Mansfield is the place I'm heading for, too. Isn't that a coincidence?
I'm sure it is.
And your car won't run, huh? I'll tell you what. We'll put your baggage in my car, and I'll give you a lift to Mount Mansfield. You can send for your car in the morning.
No.
I'll have your bags switched in a jiffy.
Please, no, I'd rather not.
Hang on. All switched. Now, come on. Get in here.
Drove away into the night, leaving behind us the dead man in the service station.
Well, From where we sit, it looks as if Linda Dixon's got herself into an awful jam. And believe me, she's shaking like jelly. Now let's see how our star Agnes Moorhead in the role of Linda Dixon is making out. All alone in the car with a strange man. But after all, she shouldn't be too scared of him. He's just a felon who needs a friend.
I sat stiff and tense beside the man who called himself John Taylor. He had both hands on the wheel and he stared out through the windshield. My eyes focused on something on his right hand. It was a stain, a small stain, but it was wet and red. I couldn't take my eyes off it.
What are you looking at?
Nothing at all.
I think I'll turn on the radio. Did you know there's been a jailbreak?
Hartley is 5'10", very dark hair. Don't be fooled by his pleasant manner. He is a killer by instinct.
A killer by instinct?
He is a killer by instinct. I looked at the man beside me. And very dangerous. He is accompanied by Helen Hearn. Helen Hearn is a clever and dangerous woman. 5'3", red hair, very pretty.
I caught Taylor looking at me out of the corner of his eye. What are you looking at?
At your hair. It's red.
There was a streak of lightning, and looking out of the rain-swept window, I glimpsed a signpost. The lightning illuminated the sign, and my heart skipped a beat at what I saw. That sign we just passed.
What about it?
It said, Barrington ahead, we're going the wrong way. We should be on the Mansfield Road, not the Barrington Road.
That's funny. I must have taken the wrong turn.
Well, aren't you going to turn back?
Sure. Whatever you say. We'll turn right around and go back.
Hello? Oh.
We're in the ditch.
In the ditch? Oh.
No good. She won't budge. Well, looks like we're stuck here for the night.
I think I'd better get out and walk. Perhaps there's a house nearby.
Walk? In this weather?
I don't mind the weather, really, I don't.
You can't walk in this storm. You're staying right here until I get the car out of the ditch. I've got some tools in the trunk compartment. You stay put.
I heard him open the trunk in the back. I listened for further sounds, but there was nothing. I didn't hear him moving back there. I didn't hear any tools. I had to find out what he was doing. Slowly, carefully, I got my door open. I stepped out into the rain and sneaked back toward the rear. I saw him there, not moving, in front of the open trunk compartment, bending over with a flashlight in his hand. The ray of light was focused on something curled up inside. It wasn't baggage or tools. It was a woman's body. Just then he saw me. He snapped the flashlight off, but not before I caught a glimpse of red hair. Then I must have fainted. When I came to, I found myself seated inside the car again. The storm was over. The night was quiet.
Oh, so you're awake again.
I don't feel well.
Is it because of what's in the trunk compartment?
Oh, she's dead.
I told you not to get out of the car.
What are you going to do with me?
What do you think?
They say that when a person loses all hope, he subconsciously seeks refuge in sleep. That's what must have happened to me. I must have dozed, or perhaps I fainted. I don't know. But I awoke with a start at the sound of brakes. I sat up straight, and saw that we had stopped in front of a small fieldstone house. Why are we stopping here?
I'm out of gas.
Oh.
Come on. We're going in.
The sign on the door said Roger Bryce, M.D. A doctor's house. I began to feel a spark of hope. There might be a chance.
I'll do the talking. Is that clear?
Yes.
Where's the bell? No. You must be awake. There's a light in the parlor.
How do you do?
Oh, good evening. Dr. Bryce?
Yes. Can I help you?
I'm terribly sorry to disturb you, Doctor, but my sister and I were heading for Mansfield, and we seem to have gotten lost. And we're out of gas.
His sister? He was passing us off as brother and sister. Now I knew why he hadn't cut my throat as he had that service station man's. He was carrying me for protection. I was his passport through the police cordon. His sister.
But I'm afraid I can't be of much help to you. I'm 7 miles from the nearest town, and I haven't any spare gasoline. But come in, won't you?
Well, yes, thank you. We will.
I wonder if I could offer you my hospitality for the night.
Oh, that would be imposing.
Not at all. I have 2 rooms that aren't being used.
Well, really...
Oh, come. Come, I insist.
I had hoped for a chance to talk to Dr. Bryce alone. Just a word to warn him. But Taylor never left us alone for a minute. He insisted on coming into my room to make sure, he said, that it was comfortable enough for me. Then he took the doctor by the arm and went out with him.
Good night, sis. And sweet dreams.
I was alone, free of the presence of John Taylor. I had another lease on life. I lay down on the bed, but I didn't dare close my eyes. I waited, my heart pounding to give them both a chance to retire. And I slipped off my shoes and got off the bed in my stocking feet. I stole across the room and inched my door open. Slowly, carefully, I stepped out into the corridor and turned right toward the doctor's room.
What's the matter, sister? Sleepwalking?
Hello!
You weren't thinking of going anywhere, sister, were you?
I wanted a drink of water.
A drink of water, hmm?
Yeah.
Hmm. In case you didn't know it, there's a water pitcher on your dresser.
Oh, well, I didn't see it.
Good night, sister.
I turned around and went back into my room. It was no use. I lay down on the bed. How long I lay there, I don't know. Perhaps I slept, perhaps not, but I heard that slight creak as my door began to inch open. The blood chilled in my veins. Vaguely, I saw the outline of the hand and the knife it held. I wanted to scream, but I couldn't. Slowly, he came toward the bed. Now he stands over me. He raises a knife. I screamed and rolled over on the bed just as the knife slashed down. I rolled off the bed and cowered in the corner. That horrible figure came around the bed after me with a knife upraised. Help! Dr. Bryce! Help me! Help me! While I cowered there in the corner, they fought all over the room in the dark. I had no strength to move, to think, not even to hope. All the life seemed to have gone dead in my veins. And then it was over. But who had won? In the dark, I strained my eyes to see. Doctor? Dr. Bryce? Is that you?
No, Linda. It isn't Dr. Bryce. It's I. John Taylor.
It was John Taylor standing there at the light switch. And on the floor lay Dr. Bryce, unconscious with a long gash in his head.
I had to hit him with a water pitcher.
My eyes swung back to Dr. Bryce, and I saw the knife still gripped in his right hand.
That's Hartley, Linda.
What?
Lee Hartley, the killer.
It was he who came in here with the knife?
Right. I was down the cellar just now. The real Dr. Bryce is down there, dead.
Oh.
This guy posed as Bryce when we came to the house.
Oh, then you... You're not Hartley.
Oh, what a situation. Oh. All the time you thought I was Lee Hartley, and I thought you were Helen Hearn on account of your red hair.
Oh, but the body of that red-haired woman...
That's Helen Hearn. This guy must have killed her back at the service station and stuffed her body in my trunk compartment while I was inside.
That all happened last summer. In time, I think I'll manage to forget that night of terror. But it won't be soon. Sometimes in the night, I dream that I see that awful figure with a knife poised above my throat. And I wake up screaming. But then John takes me in his arms and holds me tight and tells me that everything is all right. You see, I'm Mrs. John Taylor now.
Well, what do you know? A happy ending. As for Mr. Hartley, that pleasant killer, he got what he deserved. Some people never know when they're well off. He should have stayed in jail, where they never raise your rent, where they make no charge for meals or for electric current. You see, when you're in jail, everything is free, except you. Well, friends, it's time once again to close that creaking door. Until next week at this same time, when we'll be back with a little hunk of horror. You'll be sure to listen, won't you? Until next week, then. Good night. Pleasant dreams.
Kids. Now that was the scariest, wasn't it, huh? Sure. Why, that redhead almost became a deadhead, huh? Sure. Then when you draw by one of those signs that say stop ahead, you know whose head it was, huh? Then you could tell the police that not only did the car go off the shoulder, so did the head, huh? Sure. Talk about headlights. You don't get any lighter than no head at all, huh? Yes. You know, my favorite part of the whole story is where they said the killer would rather kill than eat. Now, where I came from, you don't get the choice, huh? Well, kids, I've got to fly. So until next week, same bat time, same bat station. This is the Count saying, drive like hell and get there faster, sure.
Now returns control of your radio device to you. Until next week.
No.